And welcome to the debut edition of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast from the Nats GM Radio Network. I am your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com. This is our premiere show, and the theme behind these podcasts is intended to be some casual baseball talk between myself and various major celebrities within the sports world. We'll primarily talk baseball, but like many conversations, tangents will and will be encouraged. This week's special mystery guest is one of the former driving forces at Baseball America, and now he is the draft and prospect expert at MLB.com. A true icon in prospect writing on the internet and one of my favorite writers, period. I am honored to introduce Jim Callis. Welcome, Jim, and thank you for being the first guest on the Nats GM Show.
No problem, Ryan. Thanks, and thanks for that very kind introduction as well.
Well, I'm very, very humbled and honored to have you as our first guest, and it's wonderful that you've carved out a few minutes for us. I guess we're about 10 days out from the draft now.
Yeah, it's creeping up on us. 10 days out, and then we'll have something like 1,200 picks and change over a three-day period, and then once we know who takes who, we'll try to figure out how good everybody is.
Well, that's probably a good place to start, because I just wanted to get your general kind of strengths and weaknesses of this 2014 draft class, and how this class is shaping up compared to some of the previous years.
Well, coming to you, Ryan, it was thought to be better drafts in the last couple of years have been kind of mediocre drafts, and really what baseball's been feeling is the effects of the change from the draft rules under the old CBA to the new CBA. And under the old CBA, teams could pretty much spend whatever they wanted on the draft, and now if you spend over set limits, you start losing first round picks. And essentially what happened is this is the third and final class that was kind of ravaged by the old rules. From 2009 through 2011, teams could basically spend whatever they wanted to sign high school players and diverted a lot of them from college, and as a result, the college crops aren't as strong, and I think teams are still signing college players. I mean, they're still signing high school players, but I think the future college crops will be a little bit stronger than this one. But coming into the year, there was optimism it was going to be a pretty good draft crop. Now I think it's more, I don't know if it's significantly better than the last couple. We've had a number of injuries to pitchers. Jeff Hoffman, a potential number one overall pick, and Eric Fetty both had Tommy John surgery. Then there's a handful of other pitchers who are going to go in the top round or two, who have been sidelined and either still out or have been less effective since they've come back. So it's kind of taken the edge off the top of the draft a little bit. I still think the strength of this draft is pitching, both on the high school and the college side. There are some interesting college bats this year, but there are not a lot of up-the-middle players. And on the high school side, there are some players with high ceilings, but it seems like the vast majority of them come with questions as to how well they're hit. So I mean, you can dream up some guys in this draft, Ryan, but there aren't a lot of well-rounded players, or at least guys you feel are can't miss types.
And you mentioned the top of the draft, and that's kind of the first place that I want to start is with NC State's Carlos Rodon. Kind of entered the season as one of the more surefire number one picks in recent years, and I guess struggled is probably a nice way to put it this year.
Yeah, I mean, Mom, might be a little bit harsh. I just think the bar was set so high for him, and he was so spectacular down the stretch last year when he led college baseball in strikeouts and led NC State to the College World Series, and then he had a great summer with Team USA and looked tremendous against Cuba in one specific island during the summer, and he just wasn't that spectacular. He was pretty good, and he started to pitch better toward the end of the season. NC State had him throw a lot of pitches. I was probably less worried about the pitch count than the number of sliders he threw. And his stuff, instead of being great, was merely good. So I think had it been anybody else, or if you were just looking at this performance in a vacuum and you didn't have the past to go on, you'd say, boy, Carlos Rodon's a pretty good prospect. But because we do have the past to look back at, I think you look at it and say, wow, Carlos Rodon was better last year than he was this year. The gap has narrowed between him and the rest of the field. I still think there's a good chance he's the number one pick, and I'd be surprised if he got past the number three pick, but he is not that slam dunk, obvious number one guy he was coming into the year.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I saw him at Maryland, I guess, 2 months ago when he was going up against Tenet, and the two things that you mentioned really jumped out to me, the number of pitches and the number of sliders. He was struggling with the fastball command, and he was really leaning on his slider to get the hitters out, which, was working for him, but you do worry about throwing all those sliders at that age.
Yeah, no, you do. You do. I mean, he does have a strong frame. I do think, you see that a lot in college baseball. I mean, they call for a awful lot of breaking pitches. The bats aren't as nearly as dynamic as they were a few years ago. But, you know, you can't really break an aluminum bat. You know, it's all about missing bats, not just inducing bad contact in college baseball. And so you see an awful lot of breaking balls called.
Well, if Rodon is not going to be the first pick, it seems like the two other names that are getting the most discussion at the top of the draft right now are Brady Aiken and Tyler Kolek. Can you kind of describe them? I know one's a lefty, one's a righty, but I'm sure my audience isn't too well aware with those two names.
Yeah, you know, Brady Aiken's a lefty. He's I described Kolek as strong and Aiken as athletic. I mean, they're both big guys. Kolek's bigger and stronger. Aiken's more athletic. He came into the year kind of, you know, he was a top 10 overall prospect coming into the year. You know, you looked at him as a lefty, you maybe had a chance for 3-plus pitches. And, you know, the thing is, it's not a chance anymore. I mean, he's shown them to you now. His fastball velocity has gotten better. His breaking ball's gotten sharper. He already probably had the best changeup on the high school side and as much polish and command as anybody on the high school side. So, I mean, he was already a fairly polished guy whose stuff has gotten better. And he's our top-ranked prospect right now at MLB.com and MLBPipeline.com. Kolek is the most consistently hard-throwing high school pitcher ever. I mean, he's touched 100 miles an hour most of his starts this year. You're more raw than Aiken. I mean, he's got, you know, he's all about power. He's got power to his breaking stuff. I mean, the control and command are kind of works in progress. You know, not much need for a changeup. A big guy, about 6'6", 240, 250 pounds, so he's physical. You know, I'm not hearing his name as much for the number one pick recently. There's some thought he could slide a little bit, I don't think, for any particular reason. I don't know if people are worried that he throws so hard, you know, and you've had so many pitching injuries. But I do think if there was a third candidate who could possibly go number one in the Astros right now, actually, I'm beginning to think that the Astros might be more likely to go for a high school catcher from San Diego, Alex Jackson, catcher outfielder, than it would be to go Kolek at 1-1. I mean, Kolek's very good, but he's also, you know, kind of raw, and I don't necessarily know if he kind of fits the mold of what I think the Astros are trying to do with that pick.
Where do you see Kolek's, I guess, floor? Where does he land, you know, in his worst-case scenario?
It's funny, you know, I did a mock draft a couple days ago, and I had Kolek going fifth to the Twins, and then I had a scouter tell me that he thinks there's a chance that Kolek might drop out of the top six. And I don't think it's a signability thing. And it's, I mean, his season's over. His team got eliminated from the Texas playoffs a few weeks ago. So it's not like he's doing anything to hurt his cause. I just wonder if teams are a little skittish of a guy who throws so hard. You maybe, you know, it's not like there's a red flag with his delivery, Ryan, but just a guy who throws that hard this young, you wonder, is he going to hold up? And so I wonder if there's a little bit of that, a little bit of the fact that, you know, teams always are a little bit leery of high school pitchers, probably more than anything else, especially high school right-handers. And while he has a great arm, he's raw, so it's not like you're comparing him to, say, like a Josh Beckett, who's kind of the gold standard of Texas high school pitchers, where Josh Beckett was in the big leagues pretty quick. You know, I don't know if Tyler Kolek's going to be that guy who races to the big leagues. I think he might be more of a, you know, 2-3, you know, full-season process. And so I think maybe that's what's working against him, is as much as people like the arm, they, you know, don't necessarily, you know, a high school pitcher who could take a little time to develop, they don't necessarily want to wait on that right at the very top of the draft. Yeah, that could be wrong. We could see him, you know, go 2 or 3 for all I know. But it does seem like I don't even think his stock's down. I just think teams are looking maybe a little bit more in other directions right now.
That's interesting, because like you say, the prospect that he's compared to all the time is Josh Beckett. So it's interesting you say that there probably isn't a great comp there.
I don't even like that comp, because Josh Beckett was much more advanced as a high school player, high school pitcher, had a much more consistent, you know, nasty breaking ball. I mean, Kolek's got power to his breaking ball, but he doesn't really command it. You know, Beckett was at the top level of high school baseball in Texas, the 5A level, but Kolek's at the 3A level, and there's a huge difference in competition. I mean, he's good, but, like, for instance, if you're comparing Kolek to Jameson Taillon a couple of years ago, I think Taillon was more polished, and you liked the repertoire a little bit better. And he threw hard, not as hard as Kolek, but he threw plenty hard. I mean, I like Tyler Kolek a lot, but I would put him behind Beckett and behind Jameson Taillon. And even last year with Cole Stewart, you know, Kolek throws harder than Cole Stewart, who went fourth overall at Twins. But Cole Stewart also threw hard, and he was very athletic. You know, he could play quarterback at Texas A&M. And I think the rest of his repertoire and his control were better. So I like Tyler Kulik. And, I mean, pure radar gun readings, yeah, he's as exciting as it gets. But while he's a good prospect, I don't think, you know, I would take Beckett and Tyone and Cole Stewart over him at the same stages of their career. I just think he jumps out this year because the radar guns have been so consistently good.
That makes a lot of sense. I want to change and divert back to a couple of names you mentioned earlier. You mentioned Jeff Hoffman, the injured, you know, righty at ECU. Eric, is it Feedy or Feed from UNLV? And Brandon Finnegan as well from Texas Christian, kind of the three injured college pitchers. A little bit of update where they are and, you know, maybe where you see them landing in 10 days?
Yeah, it's too early to know on those guys because I think a big part of it, especially with the first two guys, is what they're going to ask for. I mean, Jeff Hoffman, who could have been, you know, in the mix to go number one overall and seemed pretty certain to go in the first four picks, you know, had 16 strikeouts in his last game in college. You know, he's had Tommy John surgery. And, you know, a lot of it comes down to, you know, if he's willing to sign for, I'm just pulling numbers out because I don't know what he's going to ask for right now. But if he's willing to sign for $1 million, he can go, he's a better chance of going higher than if he wants, you know, $3 or $3.5 million for, you know. Same thing with Eric Fetty at UNLV. I mean, he was a guy who could have gone, I think, in that 8 to 15 range. And it's the same thing with him. You know, if he's looking to sign, you know, at a relatively lower price, then he'll go higher than if he's still looking to sign for close to what he would. You know, Finnegan's the toughest one right now because he didn't have surgery. He had some shoulder discomfort. The MRI came back clean. He left the start early. He missed the start. Came back the following week. And he, you know, first time out, I talked to a scout, I saw him. He said, you know what? He looked pretty good. You know, wasn't dominant like he was, but, you know, for first start back, he's a little rusty. You know, everything looked good. But then the second time out, he wasn't as sharp, and then he didn't pitch real great I can never keep the conference straight anymore. I think they're in the Big 12 tournament now, but he didn't pitch as well in the Big 12 tournament over the weekend. So I think he's very much kind of a, you know, his stock is very fall now. I mean, he'll pitch. Teams will set their draft boards during the week, and he'll go out and pitch in a regional for TCU. He'll have one more start before the draft, and I think how he does in that start could really affect where he goes, which is, it seems crazy that a lot of it would hinge on one start, but that's just the way it is. I mean, if he comes out and he pitches really well, then I think, you know, you kind of ease some of those concerns. But if he comes out and he goes four innings and the stuff's just, you know, okay rather than pretty, you know, as good as it's been in the past, and then he battles his command a little bit, I think teams are going to be scratching their heads and wondering what to do with him. So, and, you know, I think, like, you know, I said with the Archie guys too, you know, depending on how he pitches and, again, what his asking price is. I mean, he's a guy who, when he was fully healthy and going really, really well, I don't know if the Cubs would have taken him at number four, Ryan, but he was in the mix, or at least being discussed. You know, you heard his name up there in, you know, top four picks or so. So if he's looking to still get paid, you know, close to that, you know, like being a top 10 pick, then that could knock him down. If there's, you know, a lowered expectation because he's struggled since he's had the shoulder discomfort, you know, then teams might look at, like, okay, well, he's assuming some of the risk, and we will too. So, the first two guys definitely aren't going to pitch again. Finnegan will, but we'll come down to, I think the price tag will have a big determinant on where those guys go. Realistically, you know, there is some talk that maybe Hoffman could go to the Blue Jays at 9 or 11, and I could see that depending on what the price tag is. You know, Fetty was a top 10 pick before he had the Tommy John surgery. To me, he probably fits more towards the back half in the first round to teams that have extra picks like the, you know, I haven't heard him indirectly with any teams, but like the Indians and the Royals and the Red Sox and Cardinals all have multiple picks. He could go to one of those teams. You know, the Nationals at 18, a couple years ago, took a guy who everybody thought needed Tommy John, and he did, and Lucas Giolito, and they paid him almost $3 million. They're picking at about the same spot in this draft as they were then. You know, they could speculate on Hoffman, perhaps. You know, and Finnegan, I think a lot of it's going to ride on how he pitches in the regional.
Yeah, I saw Finnegan a couple times on TV earlier in the season, and I was blown away at the stuff that he had. I know he's, you know, not the tallest guy, and he's had the shoulder problems, but wow, would I gamble on that arm if, you know, at the right spot in the draft?
Well, that's what makes it tough for them, too, because, I mean, as good as his stuff is, I mean, he can get upper 90s and work at 93, 95 with his starter, and he's got a pretty good slider. He has a changeup that's decent, but he's 5'11", so, I mean, you have a 5'11", 185-pound guy who had some shoulder discomfort and hasn't been the same since. You're really going to have teams worry about the durability, so he might be more of a reliever than a starter. I mean, it's closer-type stuff. And I think he'd get to the big leagues pretty quick if he were a closer, but yeah, his next start is really crucial for where he goes in the draft.
Yeah, it's almost easier to pass on him in some ways. How about a few, interesting or intriguing prospects, some guys that you like that perhaps are, more second-day picks, coming up in the draft?
Yeah, second day, first day's top two rounds. I guess we were talking about these guys who are hurt. Two of the guys who intrigue me, who I think could really pay off long-term, are two guys who've come back from Tommy John surgery. You have Bryce Montesteoka, who's a high school right-hander from Kansas. He missed all of last season with Tommy John surgery. He came back, first start this year, threw 35 pitches, 94-97. What was the range? He's 6'7", 265. As you might suspect, because he missed time, he's raw. But, I mean, big body, big arm. He's been inconsistent with his secondary pitches and control, which is typical of guys coming back from Tommy John. But, I mean, you're talking about a guy, if he was fully healthy and throwing like this and a little bit more refined, you could easily look at him and maybe see first-round pick. Somebody could get a nice value on him in the third or fourth round or so. And then another guy who I like, who's also come back from Tommy John surgery, who it'll be interesting to see where he goes. There's a kid named John Curtis of Texas, another right-handed pitcher. Could have been an early-round pick coming out of high school in 2011, but he wanted to go to college. Had Tommy John surgery after his freshman year at Texas. And he also had a thoracic outlet syndrome, which is where it's kind of like, not a doctor, but essentially you have a rib removed to reduce pressure on nerves. Anyway, he's come back as a closer this year, so he's not starting again, but I think starting is in his future. He's touch 96. He show you a pretty good slider. Just like Montesteoka, not as consistent with the secondary stuff and the control, which is typical your first year back. But I think he's a guy who could be a number two or three starter that maybe you get in the fourth or fifth round. And even though he's a redshirt sophomore, I think he's fairly signable. He's already graduated, Ryan, in 3 years with a double major in English and history at Texas. So I think he's going to be very, very signable, and I think he could be, assuming he gets back to health or back to where he once was, that could be a nice steal for somebody, too.
Yeah, those are two good names. Before I let you go, Jim, I'd love to do what we do every time on the show, although it's our debut show, but do some rapid-fire questions. So I just throw a couple of questions at you and just, briefly what kind of off the top of your head type of the thing. Quick thoughts on Maryland's Jake Stinnett, and where do you think he's drafted next week?
I'd say... this is a little harder on rapid-fire because he's in a unique position. I'd say third round... But because he's a college senior, and that comes with a little bit of a discount because he really doesn't have any negotiating leverage, I could see him. He's pitched so well this spring. I could really see Stinnett going in the second round to a team looking to save a little bit of money. He's going to go very, very well in the draft. You might see him go late on the first day of the draft.
Wow, good for him. Who is your personal cheese ball or cheese balls in this draft?
I don't know if I have a guy who I'm just absolutely in love with, but I think one guy that I think I'm on higher a little bit more than other people, there's a left-handed reliever in Mississippi State named Jacob Lindgren, who's got a wipeout slider. He throws 91-95 out of the bullpen. I just think this guy's going to get to the big leagues very, very quickly, and I think he has the upside of a closer. So I like Jacob Lindgren. I think he's going to go pretty good. We had him ranked, at 41 when we did our top 100 at MLBpipeline.com. We adjusted him down a little bit, so when we have our top 200 come out this week, he's going to be 51 or 52. I think he might actually get drafted a little higher than that. So, again, I don't think I'm the only guy who likes him, but I do think he doesn't get discussed as much as he should. I think he's going to get to the big leagues very, very quickly.
That's a good name. Give me your prediction for the Nationals pick at number 18.
Well, I took the easy way out when I did my last mock draft, and I need to put Jeff Hoffman somewhere. And because of the Giolito parallel I discussed earlier, I gave them Hoffman. I'll throw out a couple other names if they don't go with an injured guy. I've heard names such as Nick Howard, the right-hander from University of Virginia, could possibly go there. I've heard Sean Reed Foley, high school right-hander from Florida, could possibly go there. And A.J. Reed, first baseman from Kentucky, who's the NCAA leader in home runs right now, is another name. But I went Hoffman. If anybody who read my mock draft saw that, I wrote that it was purely speculative. And for the reasons I outlined before, too, we don't know where he's going to go, but that seems like that might be a fit.
Yeah, it's funny. I tweeted that out about 2 seconds after the Hoffman information last month.
Well, the other one, too, that makes some sense is, you know, Fetty not only is a Tommy John guy, which they've done, but Fetty's a Scott Boras advisee, and they always sign Boras guys. So 18 feels a little bit rich for me on Fetty. Because he's, you know, he was probably a 8 to 15 guy before the Tommy John, but again, you know, it's a Boras guy. Maybe they cut a deal and then go big on their second pick.
Yeah, that makes sense. Real quick take from you: how much has D. Gordon's start, you know, wonderful start to the season this year, improved his brother Nick's draft status, if at all?
I don't really think it has. I mean, people do look at bloodlines. You know, he's also got, you know, his father Tom was an all-star reliever. But I think they're different types of players. I mean, I think Nick's a better hitter than D. D's a more explosive runner than Nick. Nick's a better shortstop than D. So I really think that they're enough of different players that it's not really an issue. And then the other difference, too, was D kind of snuck up on some people because he played a lot of, or if I remember this correctly, D played a lot of basketball in high school, and then he went to junior college, and I think there was a transcript issue. And so he didn't play in his, you know, the year he got drafted by the Dodgers, he didn't play that spring. So you kind of had to go see him. Whereas Nick, you know, Nick had a really good showcase circuit last year and a strong spring. So, I mean, you know, they're brothers and they're both middle infielders and they have similar builds. But I do think they're different enough as players. You know, I don't really think D's emergence this year really helps Nick, but I don't think Nick really needed the help. I mean, Nick is probably going to go in the first 4 or 5 picks.
Yeah, I mean, he's the best middle infielder in this draft, right?
Yeah, I mean, Trey Turner is really the only other middle infielder who I think goes in the first round or for first 50 picks. And I don't know if it would be 30 to nothing, but if you surveyed all 30 teams as to who they'd rather have, Nick Gordon or Trey Turner, I do think Nick Gordon would win that in a landslide.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to put my name on the fact that Trey Turner is going to hit. So, one last question.
Yeah, it's a little scary, although he did finish strong, so he's... Yeah, but I'm with you on that, too. A lot of people are worried about that.
Yeah. One last question. The local kid from Stonebridge, Virginia, J.B. Buskauskas, does he get to UNC, or does somebody, you know, give him enough of a bonus that he, you know, decides to go pro?
I think he gets to UNC. I mean, he did write a letter or an email to all the area scouts saying that he wanted to go to college, and you know, when he reclassified from a high school junior to a high school senior over the summer, he wasn't doing that to become draft eligible. He was doing that so he could enroll at UNC a year earlier than expected. But you know, even without the letter, I would have been interested to see what would have happened with him, because I do think he got a little overhyped in terms of people. Yeah, you know, you saw some national media calling him, you know, a certain first-round pick earlier this spring. And I never saw that. I mean, he, you know, there were reports he touched 100. I mean, he's thrown, you know, great, you know, upper 90s, you know, repeatedly, you know, touching upper 90s throughout the spring. But the thing is with Buskauskas, he's about 5'11", 185, 190 pounds with a ton of effort in his delivery. And just with the lack of size and the amount of effort and how hard he throws, I know teams were worried about his, you know, how long is he going to hold up doing that? And it's real hard to project a 5'11 maximum effort guy as a starting pitcher in the big leagues. I mean, I think you're looking at as a reliever, and you don't often see a high school reliever, no matter how hard he's thrown, any guy you're projecting as a reliever, taken super early. So to me, I think at best he was a sandwich pick to a team with extra picks, probably more realistically a second-round pick, and it sounded like he was a pretty academically-oriented kid, and I didn't know if second-round money was going to get it done. So even before he wrote the letter, I kind of had my doubts I didn't think in any way he was a lock to sign. And since he wrote that letter, which there's no reason to believe it's not sincere, that's any kind of ploy, I don't think he gets taken or high enough to pay him what it's going to take to get him away from UNC.
Yeah. Well, Jim, thank you so very much for joining us and giving us so much time this afternoon. Can I just give you a spot here to give your plugs? Where are we going to see you during the draft and on Twitter and all that good stuff?
Oh, yeah, no, I appreciate that, Ryan. I mean, I'm seems like I'm writing about two or three stories a day and all kinds of scouting reports for MLBpipeline.com right now, which is part of MLB.com. I'm trying to tweet when I'm not busy writing at Jim Callis MLB, J-I-M-C-A-L-L-I-S MLB. And then on we're due actually this week, Wednesday, we'll record a show that will air on Sunday, which is a top 50 draft prospects preview show that will air on MLB Network on Sunday.
Oh, great.
And then with draft week, I will be part of MLB Network's first day coverage, as I have been for the last few years. And then on the second day, I will be part of MLB.com and MLBpipeline.com's coverage, which is that is rapid fire. It's rounds 3 through 10. There's a minute between each pick. Teams make a pick on the conference call. Johnson Mayo and I are in the studio with Tim McMaster, and we kind of, you know, well, we throw out 30 seconds of analysis, and then boom, it's on to the next one. And that keeps us on our toes, but that is fun. It's amazing on that one, Ryan. I've done that the last 2 years, even before I started working for MLB.com when I was still at Baseball America, and I've enjoyed that. I mean, it's like you're exhausted because you've been doing so much draft work, and then you look up, and it's like 6 hours have gone by, and you've talked about, I guess it's about 240 picks, and I enjoy that. And then, well, we'll be doing all kinds of analysis at MLB.com and MLBpipeline.com after the draft is over. So thank you for giving the opportunity to plug all that. There's a lot going on in the next couple weeks with the draft approaching.
No, it's great. I live blog all three of the days of the MLB draft, and by the end of it, I can hear that guy's voice that announces the picks in my head. So it's a great day, but it's definitely helped and made that much better by you. So thank you so much for coming on and being our debut guest. I greatly appreciate you giving me some time today.
No problem, Ryan. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
You too.
And that was my conversation with MLB's Jim Callis. I'd be remiss if I didn't thank him again for being so gracious and generous with his time, especially so close to draft day and with all the NCAA College World Series stuff being announced today. And before we conclude this first show, I want to quickly thank a few special people without whom this show would not have launched. First, I want to thank my wife, Mrs. Natch GM, who supports me in this website every day. Thank you. Next, I want to thank my mom and my dad, who are both my biggest cheerleaders. Thank you. I also want to thank my tech sensei and my brother, Tim, without whom there would be no Nats GM website. Thank you, my friend. Thank you for always taking care of all these technology needs for me. A special thank you out to MJ, Mike Johnson from Ballhawks Radio, who was invaluable in helping set up the Nats GM studios. Thank you, brother. I hope to give you some of this beer that I've got waiting for you, hopefully very soon. And finally, to my producer, Josh Owens, a.k.a. The Manchild, who is in studio today helping me get this podcast up and making sure everything's going on. Thank you, Josh. I appreciate it. With that, we are finished with the debut edition of the Nats GM Show. Thank you for joining me, and thank you for downloading. Once again, for that, remember, in the game of life, punt fastballs.